Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
So this is the way the world works, guys. This is the way that it works, that we have something, we watch something, we like something, we kind of look at it, and then inevitably the backlash starts. And the backlash started yesterday with Horace Grant when it comes to The Last Dance. Horace Grant, of course, was called a rat by Michael Jordan in one of the episodes, saying that he was the reason that Sam Smith wrote his book, The Jordan Rules, that Horace was the source for most of that material. Michael just matter-of-factly said, oh, yeah, that was Horace. Horace fired back yesterday saying that Michael was a snitch, talking about those guys having a good time when he first got to the Bulls. And this is really the first time. We know some guys have had their nose out of joint, namely Scottie Pippen. But this is the first time where one of Michael's former teammates really came at him in the midst of The Last Dance.
Man, you always get snitches on teams. That's why I always stayed to myself.
So who's the snitch? Both of them?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily – look, I wouldn't necessarily call Michael a snitch.
Mike's a snitch.
I wouldn't call it a snitch because Mike didn't tell on his teammates to the
Scott
coaches.
Burrell.
He didn't tell on his teammate to the coaches during that time or front office or nothing like that. He said it in his documentary what had happened and transpired at the time when he was young to us as an audience. Unless he went to the coaches and the security and all them was like, oh, man, they up in there doing coke and they got girls and they partying and it's a game tomorrow. That's snitching. That's snitching. Talking Listen, about it.
Telling 6 million people, even if it's 30 years later.
That's not snitching. I just wouldn't have done it if it was me. I probably wouldn't have done it just because I wouldn't even be thinking about it. I'd just be like, guys, you know, I decided to stay to myself at the end of the day. And, you know, I didn't want to participate in them having fun. Leave it at that, not go into details about what it was that they was doing. He didn't he didn't name names, although you can if you're smart. And you can go and probably pull up the roster that year and look at a few guys on the team and check their backgrounds, and you probably can figure out who it is.
I got to disagree with you, man. What he did to Scott Burrell, putting his business on blast like that to a camera – when he was
what do you mean when you say what he do with Scott Burrell?
He put Scott Burrell's business on blast to the camera in real
on the
time.
Airplane.
And then he was joking. And then he included putting him on blast in the documentary years later.
Man, he was joking on the plane. He was joking. He was joking on the plane with the dude, man. He was just clowning.
So was he just clowning Horace Grant?
He was clowning, though.
How do you know he was?
You can look and tell that they were sitting there together, tongue in cheek, though. LZ, come on now. Now you're going into something. You can't do that, LZ. That man was sitting on the plane.
The Horace Grant part was not. He was not joking about that. And Horace,
let me finish the Scott Burrell part, because he says he's joking, but Scott said he had to go back and tell his family, you know, what it was.
Well, he probably shouldn't have played that. He shouldn't have played it to the point where Scott had to go back and do it if it was uncomfortable for him. But he wasn't. He wasn't. Look, man. As they say, you can't throw stones at a glass house. Ain't that how they say it? You shouldn't throw stones at a glass house.
You should be building a house with glass.
Well, whatever. However y'all use
those. Those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. I screwed it up. Y'all got it right. At the end of the day.
Here's the quote. Well, I warned my parents about that part. I knew that part was coming, and someone told me that it was coming in tonight's episode. So I was like, when is it coming? So I'm sitting on the couch watching with my wife, and I was like, what is she going to think? What are her parents going to think? But you know what? It was 20-something years ago, so it's a different way of life. Wasn't a joke.
But he joking about it, though.
Mike joking about that.
Mike wasn't trying to tell on that man. Come on now. You know damn well Michael wasn't trying to tell on that man, LZ. You know that. So stop trying to make it more than what it is. You know he was joking with that dude. It got on air.
You can joke. Listen, both things can be true, Keith. You can joke and still be telling the truth. One doesn't exclude the other. Clearly, Scott literally is telling you that he had to think about what his wife would think, what his in-laws would think. And then he just kind of said what his parents
Because when people hear stuff like that, they sit back and go, oh, you was doing that? You was doing that? Michael Jordan at that time wasn't thinking about this documentary in 2020.
I think that. But he included it in the documentary. It's the point.
That's Horace not stitching, though. The Horace Grant thing is different.
Horace's point, I believe, is that it's hypocritical for Michael to call him a snitch. It's hypocritical for Michael to go at all of these other people when Michael has a certain way of doing business. And if you say anything about him, if you are critical about him, even mildly, if you're one of these guys that is a target of his and you speak out, then he cuts you off. That I think Horace is offended by the hypocrisy of it all, not necessarily the accuracy or him saying this or that about a different guy. Horace is saying, you can't call me a snitch. You can't do this when you're doing that. You can't say that you're the greatest teammate of all time and you are the reason that we did this when we all know that these other things are true. I just think it was the hypocrisy of it all that offended Horace Grant. Not so much that he said this or that about Horace specifically. It was that Michael had his version of events and he's saying it's not true. He said 90% of the stuff in that documentary was not real. 90%.
Yeah, but here's what I'm going to ask both of you knuckleheads.
Yes, sir. All right?
I just
agree with you. I said, all right.
Okay. All right. Did Michael Jordan, or better yet, did Horace Grant go to Sam and give him information about the Bulls? Did he do that? It's a yes or no.
I don't know.
What do you think?
I'd say no.
Okay, you say no. Did Michael Jordan go to the security or anybody in the organization at the time that they was doing cocaine and acting out in the hotel room, did he go and tell on them?
We don't know.
Oh, God, Kelsey, you go.
But, Key, I don't understand why he has to go tell a security person or a coach. He told 6 million people on television.
45 years later, he's having a conversation about what occurred.
There's a statute of limitations on snitching.
That's not snitching.
All right, so here's the deal. All right. Snitch, I'm gonna break it down for you hood style.
Uh-oh.
Whistleblowing is when you tell the truth when you have nothing to lose.
No, when you name snitching, names.
Snitching is when you tell the truth because you've been caught and you got something to lose, and you're trying to get out of it. So the question is, what exactly did Michael do? Was he just gossiping? Was he just, because when you're telling secrets years ago and you can't, and you don't face ramifications, it is true to a certain degree. That's not truly the definition of snitching. Snitching is the cops got me, but they'll let me go if I tell them my boy, so I'm telling my boy so I can get off. That's snitching. Whistleblowing is, this ain't right. I'm going to tell it like it is. Whether I get in trouble or not, I need to get this off my chest. It feels more like the latter than the former, but the idea that Horace Grant was snitchy, to me, doesn't fit the definition either.
Well, here's what I would say, having been the only guy in a professional locker room as a player, there are people that I have been on teams with that have gone and told the coaches what was going on. To me, that's snitching because you couldn't take part in what was going on. That's snitching to me. If they came out 25 years later, 30 years later, and said, man, they was doing this and they was doing that, then I'd be like, okay, well, whatever. You just telling what we was doing because you're mad. That's the way I would look at it.
So if that's the definition, then why was Horace Grant busted for snitching?
Horace Grant told in the time. Right then and there,
according to Michael.
According to Michael, no one else
is saying that happened.
Right.
But nobody else is saying it because Michael said it, and it's Michael's documentary, so he said it.
Well, I get that. That's the point.
Players talk to media people all the time. and give them little, you know that, LZ.
Of course. No,
they
get that.
They drop dimes on stuff all the time to people.
But Michael said in the documentary, Key, that the Jordan Rules, the book by Sam Smith, who's been on with us a couple of times over the last month or so, that, oh, that was all Horace. He just basically said that Horace spilled his guts on that book, and Horace denies it. Sam Smith has never confirmed anything about that. The other players on the team are not saying, yeah, that was, you know, Horace probably was a part of that. No one else is saying that other than, and I think this is Horace's point, that when it comes to the snitching, when it comes to Sam Smith, and I want us to listen to this right here, talking about Scottie Pippen. I think that Horace Grant is looking at this and looking at the way that Scottie Pippen is portrayed and saying, hey, hold on a second. This isn't right. Here's Horace Grant yesterday on ESPN 1000 in Chicago talking about Pippen.
I have never seen, quote unquote, a number two guy as decorated as Scottie Pippen portrayed so badly in terms of the migraine, in terms of the 1.6 or 7 second selfish. I have never seen this in all of my life. In the respect of, Pitt was out there, I think, game 6, could barely walk, getting knocked down on his back, trying to do whatever he could to help that team. And my point is, why was that 1.6 or 7 seconds in the documentary, so-called documentary, about Pip? I mean, MJ wasn't even on the team.
Right.
Why was that in there? I mean, that we handled that year really well as a team.
Well, they could have – Michael could have said – Michael's whoever put it together, they could have put something together that said, you know what, they got through it, they continued to – play the way that they played, and they wind up losing, blah, blah, blah. They could have elaborated on it if they wanted to kind of loosen things up from Scotty. But when you see it in episode 1 or 2, whichever one it was, you certainly makes you think about the way Scotty was handling his situation when they got Kukoc. But then when you go to game 6 and he's got back issues and he's still out on the floor, you certainly should appreciate that player and hold him to a different standard than you were in the beginning of the episodes. There's no question about that. And I don't think that he was getting his just due after the first couple episodes. People, you know, form their opinion based on what they saw in the beginning, not what they saw in the end.
Here's where, you know, there's like you wonder what's going on, right? So we're talking about this series against the Bulls, right? He doesn't go in and he doesn't, you know, take the shot. Tony Kukoc hits the shot, blah, blah, blah. They eventually lose in 7 games, right? This is the series we're talking about. You guys remember what else happened in that series? Because this was really instrumental in terms of why the Bulls didn't win, in my opinion.
That call? Are you talking about the call, LZ?
Yes.
Yeah.
How was that not in the doc?
Yeah, I was surprising that wasn't
that
there.
That was huge. So here you take time to look at that series, and you talk about the fact that in that 1 point, whatever seconds, less than 2 seconds left, this issue with Scottie Pippen. But another play involving Scottie Pippen with about the same amount of time left, by the way, which was instrumental in that outcome and that series happens, and you opt not to include that. So this is what I'm talking about. Now, this is where I understand what Horace Grant is talking about. It's like, you can paint the picture any way you want to. Scottie Pippen screwed up in that one game, but he was a giant in that series, and had that BS call not been made, they likely would have won that series and have been in the Eastern Conference Finals. That was a huge
turning
point in that series.
Without Michael.
Without Michael, exactly. But he didn't want to tell you that. You see what I'm saying? Well, he wanted you to see that they were somewhat dysfunctional without him and that Scottie Pippen would never live this down. Fast forward, I'm coming back.
What I think Horace's global point is this.
He put a lot into that.
That just because Michael Jordan says that it was something doesn't necessarily mean it was something. That this the docuseries The Last Dance was incredibly entertaining. It was very compelling. It was a lot of fun to watch, but it doesn't mean that is the end-all, be-all when it comes to the truth of these situations. I think that is Horace's point, that just because Michael says it doesn't mean that it's gospel truth, that there are some nuances here. There are some things that are just flat-out omissions here that need to be mentioned, and I think that's what he's getting at. Just because Michael says it doesn't mean that it's absolutely true, because, like you did, the call, the sit-down, there are all these different things, the James Worthy piece that you brought up a few times, LZ, all of this stuff, they're really good points, but they don't tell the story that wanted to be told in those 10 episodes, so they were omitted. That's fine, too. You just need to understand both of them.
Right.
And they, look, do I think that they went out of their way to not talk about James Worthy in the situation? No, I don't think that they went out of their way. He just was talking about the story of Jordan winning his first championship. Why mention, oh, he did it because James Worthy got hurt? You just, that's not the way they wanted to write the story.
All right, we got lots more Michael Jordan. There's more Horace Grant sound as well. But there is a number that is going to blow your mind when it comes to Scottie Pippen. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Let me ask you guys a question. Can either one of you do 100 push-ups in 4 minutes?
No.
No, I ain't never tried it.
Sean McVay can.
I can't.
Sean McVay can do it. 100 push-ups in 4 minutes. There's a video online that you can go check out right now, that Sean McVay is a little swole in the picture. He's looking good. He's out there doing 100 push-ups in 4. You could give me 4 hours. I don't know if I could knock out 100 of them.
Is that all he ever does is push-ups? Because usually when you can do that sort of stuff, that's all you're doing is that one exercise.
No. If you're really good, and can you know this? You're an athlete. If you can bench a lot, you can do a lot of push-ups because you're activating
the same
stabilizing
exercise
muscles.
To me. That's what I mean. That's the same. Chest is chest. That's all. Better yet, if you're doing only chest exercises, then you can do 100 push-ups. Is that all he's doing? That's all he's doing. I mean, you know.
No, he's got some legs, too.
You can qualify however you want.
I'm not looking at Sean like that, though, LZ.
The guy did 100 push-ups in 4 minutes. It's 100 push-ups in 4 minutes. I don't care what you – that's incredibly impressive. There can't be – there's 32 coaches in the NFL, right? Is there another coach in the league that could do that?
I think Cliff could probably do 100 push-ups in 4 minutes. I think he could. Andy Reid could do it, and he wouldn't even have to use his arms. He just keeps going back and forth.
I bet you Cliff Kingsbury has an opportunity.
What about
trying to think
before?
Ron,
yeah, it
Rivera,
have to be
maybe
one of the young guys.
Maybe Ron could probably do. I'm just trying to think of dudes that you know.
Oh, how about B down in Miami?
Brian Flores?
Yeah.
He probably could do it. Yeah. Everybody else, though, no, they got to go on the diet.
Matt LaFleur could probably do it.
Nah, Matt LaFleur can't do it.
You don't think Matt LaFleur could do it?
No.
What about Kyle Shanahan?
Bronze, get Matt LaFleur in the phone.
No, hell no.
Oh, you know who could probably do it?
Man, Kyle Shanahan looked like a raisin that was in water.
No. You know who could probably do it? Real talk? I bet you Coach Lynn could do it.
Coach Lynn, ooh. That's right. Coach
Lynn could do it.
Coach Lynn, for sure, 100%. Ron Rivera, Coach Lynn, Sean McVay.
Now, Ron Rivera's, A, getting up there, and B, he's a big dude. Big dudes and push-ups, that's not usually a great
idea. That's true.
Yeah,
but he's fit, too.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
fit.
He is fit. But Sean McVay, how tall is Sean McVay? 5'9", 5'10", something like that?
Probably
5'10", 5'11".
Okay, so he's not, you know, Ron Rivera was playing in the trenches in the NFL, for God's sakes. He's a big dude. Like, if you're going to be able to do this,
okay,
Sean McVay's
so
got the shorter
so
arms.
So get rid of him. Go Sean, okay. Huxbury, and Lynn.
Huxbury.
Who are you Huckleberry fan? What are you talking about?
No,
Cliff Kingsbury?
I like Huxbury better. Coach Huxbury down in Arizona for sure. Hey, here's a question. Here's another question for you guys. Why has LeBron James not been screaming from the mountaintop that Michael Jordan never had a winning record without Scottie Pippen and that he took Booby Gibson to the finals?
Because you can't do that.
Because that's our job. Because that's our job.
Why is he
that's your
that?
Job.
That's what we're supposed
that's
to do.
That's LZ's job.
Listen, it's quite remarkable how when you control the narrative like that, you can set the table any way you want to, because people literally are acting as if LeBron James now should not even be in a top five conversation. Like they're moving pieces around and moving people ahead of them. Go look online. Ever since ESPN did their top 74 players and LeBron was listed as number two. People have been trying to find reasons to justify knocking him down.
Well, he's one of the top players to ever play in the NBA, period. It's not even – it's nothing to even talk about.
No, I couldn't agree
more. He's a consummate winner.
Yeah, I'm just mind-boggled that you know, when you look at it, I've 6-0, MJ, tennis shoes, ball hair shave, knee brace on with no knee problems, all of that. You go through all of those, millions of dollars in shoes. You just look at everything. He's the king. He's the guy. But then when you start to break down and you really look at it, you go, damn, if there was no Scottie Pippen, man, that dude may never won a championship.
Well, Hold on a second. It's not just that he might not have never won a championship. The fact of the matter is, and LZ mentioned this earlier, Michael Jordan never had a winning record without Scottie Pippen. And I don't want to crawl into that one right now. We'll come back to that in a second. But for the sake of this discussion, like you just said, with the Michael and the LeBron comparisons have been going on for years. And it's always Michael is 6-0. Michael is this, that, and the next thing. And LeBron, well, LeBron's lost six times in the finals. The fact of the matter is LeBron took a couple of at least one team, his first trip to the finals against San Antonio a million years ago. That was a legitimately bad team with the exception of LeBron James that he took to the damn NBA finals. Michael Jordan couldn't get over 500. And LeBron's taking a team to the finals where the second best player is Boogie Gibbs. Come on, man. I mean, what are we talking about here?
He was messing around with me's and you's, huh?
Exactly. I mean, I get it. And this is not to say that Michael Jordan is anything other than the best player I've ever seen, because I think he is. But that is an incredibly powerful argument for LeBron James that, and we've seen it, that he's taken teams that are not very good. A couple of those Cleveland teams that were guys with Kyrie Irving, obviously a great player, but Kevin Love is the third guy. Those teams were not stacked the way that the Warriors and the Lakers and the Celtics and the Bulls and those teams were stacked. And LeBron was still getting them to the NBA Finals. This needs to be talked about more because it is an incredibly powerful argument
Let me give you this number real quick. It certainly makes me appreciate
LeBron James even more, though.
LeBron James comes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They get better by almost 20 games immediately. And the next season, they're above 500. So basically, 1 year in LeBron James's long run, the Cleveland Cavaliers was below 500, and that was his rookie year. And remember, LeBron James came in out of high school. So we're saying a 20-year-old basically is at 500 and doesn't turn back as a Cleveland Cavalier. His only other losing season, obviously, was the first year with the Lakers, and we know why, because he was hurt. And he's done this with kids. He's done this with pros. He's done this with Hall of Fame players. He's done this as the only person that's an all-star in the squad. Everywhere he goes, he just wins games, regardless of who you give him. Even though he may complain about his teammates not being enough to win a championship, he still is able to take whatever you give them and win 50 games.
I wonder if that changes anybody else's mind out there. I'm genuinely curious. 877-710-ESPN. When you hear that Michael Jordan was never over 500 without Scottie Pippen, it sure as hell makes me appreciate Scottie more. It certainly makes me more sensitive to the way that Scottie feels about his portrayal in The Last Dance. But when it comes to LeBron and Michael, that is a game changer.
No, it is. It's remarkable to hear that Michael Jordan is under 500 in his career without Scottie Pippen, and you look at it and you go, Scottie Pippen was without Michael Jordan and took the team to what, the Eastern Conference Final?
Scottie Pippen took him to the semifinals.
Michael Jordan never took his team to the semifinals. He took him to the playoffs once, right?
Yes.
They went three straight years. They lost in the first round before Scottie Pippen.
But Scottie, even though he sat on the bench, wind up getting to the semifinals. Interesting.
Let's try a quick phone call here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Manuel in Gardena. Manuel, you are on the morning show. What's up?
Woo-hoo! We are the honking people. We love to hump around. Hey, I got to take it back to the morning show old school. Fellas, as usual, you're making my morning better and the city of L.A. However, I have to take a little bit of a shot. Who was it that was disrespecting that Cleveland Cavs squad, man? Didrunas Ilgauskas and Larry Hughes were not just anybody, man. Come on.
Yes, Bob they were. Sura,
Bob Sura could hit a three from anywhere. Come on, man. Don't be like that. Nah, I'm just playing, fellas. Hey, great show as usual. I just wanted to give it up to you guys, man. Been loving the snake drafts. Been loving everything that you guys do, man. Keep up the good work.
You glad I'm winning, huh?
How do you mean you winning? You tied with me.
No, I won today.
You won today?
I won by, what did I beat you by, like 80%?
Oh, you beat me by like 60%. Comfortably.
Jeez, I wouldn't, yeah. I'd go home and hide if I was you.
Yeah, I think Amber Rose owes me some votes. I think she dragged me down instead of lifting me up. I'm not going to
blame you got no votes for somebody that got,
Charlie Brown.
Wait, hold on. You got no votes for somebody that got 19 million followers on social media. I ain't never heard of nothing like that.
Isn't that crazy? I was like, dang.
You must have been following a fake account.
You know what I should have done? I should have used a picture of Amber Rose as opposed to Samuel L. Jackson. That might have actually turned the tide for me.
Send me a picture of Amber Rose. Let me see what she looks like.
You don't know what she looks like?
Even I know what she looks like, Key.
She's bald.
Obviously, 19 million people that LZ depended on for his voting.
All right. Major League Baseball is still shooting for a 4th of July return. Pedro Gomez, who covers Major League Baseball for ESPN, he's going to join us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Major League Baseball is still shooting for a July 4th or thereabouts restart of their, I should say, start of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Joining us right now, covers MLB for ESPN, friend of the program, Pedro Gomez. Pedro, good morning. How are you?
I am well. What was that commercial? Keyshawn Johnson and his fellas. You guys are fellas?
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
It's like Dinah Ross and the Supremes.
Man. Damn.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you was on the show on a permanent basis, you'd be part of the fellas as well.
I would just be a fella.
Pedro, so I don't know if that's appealing to you or not, Pedro.
Pedro, let me tell you something. There is a good career to be had being a Destiny's Child. Everybody can't got to be Beyonce. If you just keep your mouth shut and do the dance moves in the background, you can still be a Destiny's Child member and make a good living.
The Ray Lance.
That is correct. And speaking of good living, is Major League Baseball going to get back to having a good living 1 week removed from the last time we talked to you, 1 week closer to Major League Baseball, yes or no?
There are just so many hoops to jump through. That's the problem. You know, we released – I was part of the investigative unit's piece that came out yesterday on ESPN.com with a massive piece that goes into a lot of – the issues that MLB is facing with trying to relaunch. And I'm from the camp that I absolutely want baseball back, but God, you read the reporting that you know my colleagues did on this piece, and there's just a lot to go through, and it seems like there's, you know, almost anything that could force them to hit the brakes and say, okay, we can't do it. So I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, but it's going to be a very, very difficult task to try to get the game back.
Why do you think that out of all the team sports, it feels as if baseball is the furthest one away from being on the field for some reason?
You know, I think the Baseball Players Association, the union, is... it's easily recognized as the strongest sports union, actually take out the word sports, the strongest union in the country. And they have a lot of power, and they want to make sure that their players are going to be safe and compensated, like, justly. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest obstacles right now facing the owners from getting the game back. That it's not just, okay, everybody back to work, let's go. The players' union has a strong, strong voice, and they want to make sure that things are right for their members. And that's, I think, that's probably one of the biggest reasons that this is going to have some difficulty. And a lot of it has to do with the safety issue. And let's not be naive, the compensation.
Yeah, Paper, with that in mind, you know, when the discussions about restarting spring training and then ultimately having a season came up about a week or so ago, we saw guys, Blake Snell in particular, come out and say, hey, look, I need to get paid. Now, since then, we really have not heard too much about that. Bryce Harper kind of co-signed that along the way. Did the union make a conscious decision to just say, hey, we're not going to talk about that publicly? And is it still the number one issue preventing us from going back to playing baseball?
The union absolutely told its members, hey, let's calm down. Let's not have 600 different voices on this issue. Let's just have one voice, which is Tony Clark, the president of the association, a former player. Let's have him be the voice. We will have discussions behind closed doors, but we can't have everybody talking about this because it just it distracts from our one total message. So absolutely, that has happened. And I just think that, I don't know if it's the number one issue, but if it's not, it's tied. I think safety is an issue for players. The players I've spoken to, without question, they recognize what they've told me is, we're the ones taking the risk. Why should we further take down our pay when we're the ones putting our family, ourselves and our family's health on the line? So, you know, there's definitely a valid argument there. What Blake Snell said may have come across difficult for fans to understand, but if you listen to what he is saying, I don't know that he's wrong.
Pedro Gomez is joining us here on the morning show. Pedro, now, we don't know when the actual regular season is going to start. We don't even know when spring training is going to start. With the 50 states opening back up to some degree of some form, can we see baseball teams starting to go back into the facilities and pitch and catch and BP and some of those things within their state?
Yeah, you know, I think that they're going to want a universal start date for everyone. You can't have 22 teams in municipalities saying, okay, we can start, and then the other eight with municipalities saying, no, you can't. We've got certain restrictions of gatherings of 10 or more. You know, it does create an unfair playing field. If you're going to have everybody start, it has to be all 30. Now, the two states where spring training takes place, Florida and Arizona, both of those states have said, we're open, sports facilities are open. So if clubs want to go back to their spring training facilities, say on a specific date, yes, that can happen at this point. But everything I've heard is that Major League Baseball, the owners, would prefer each club to return to their home city to get things going. And part of that also is financial. It saves money having everybody go to their home city, have spring training at your home stadium because it's not cold anymore, so you can do it in Denver and Minnesota or wherever. And then therefore save money from having everybody go to Florida or everybody go to Arizona. There is a cost measure there, a cost savings measure there. But if you can't get 28 different municipalities, which is what it is, because there's two teams in Chicago, two in New York, and otherwise 28. And we already know Canada is not going to allow travel between the countries. So therefore the Blue Jays, they're not going to be able to go to Toronto. They're going to have to find a new home, whether that's Buffalo, New York, or somewhere in Florida, whatever. They're going to have to go to somewhere else. So it's going to be difficult in that sense that you've got to find 28 different municipalities saying yes. Again, though, if spring training takes place in Florida and Arizona, that can happen as soon as there's an agreement between the players and owners.
Pedro, from a X's and O's perspective, which team benefits from this delay and which team is hurt most by this delay?
I think the The teams it benefits are probably the second division clubs, the ones that weren't expected to contend. You know, the Tigers, the Royals, the Pirates, the Giants, the Marlins, clubs like those, because the shorter a season, the more you have a chance to do something well for a short span and try to get into the postseason, especially if, you know, there's going to be 14 clubs in the postseason. They've already said they plan to expand, so therefore, instead of 10, 14. That opens up more playoff spots, and certainly a club can get hot over a 2.5-3 month portion, and all of a sudden, you find yourself in, say, a playoff position at the All-Star break, but at the end of September, you're nowhere close. That happened last year with the Pirates. The Pirates, I think, were either a half a game or one game out of first place at the All-Star break. So that can happen. And all of a sudden, a team that is really strong could find itself struggling, knowing, however, it's a 162-game season. We've got the horses. We'll straighten this out. And at the end of the year, we will be where we're supposed to be. And certainly that happened a couple of years ago with the Dodgers right there in L.A., where they were struggling for about 3 or 4 months. But at the end of the season, they had, you know, the guys to ride, and they were able to get there. So I think those are the things that could happen that would be surprising, because it is an 80 or 82-game season that they're looking at.
Pedro Gomez covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. Pedro, appreciate your time as always. Thanks a bunch.
Of course, boys. Or fellas. Right. Sorry, fellas.
Fellas.
And key. Key.
Key and the fellas. Absolutely. Thanks, Pedro. Take It or Shake It is coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Okay, Key, let's start in the NFL. Let's take a listen to the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, saying that they are not satisfied where they are with the current situation of hiring minorities to be head coaches.
We're not satisfied where we are. We know we should and can do better. And that's why this package of, you know, seven initiatives is very significant. Some are focused on shorter term benefits or results, potentially. Others are focused on midterm and long term changes that we think will produce results. But we think that's the kind of approach. There's no single solution to this. It's a matter of a number of initiatives that we think ultimately are going to lead to better results.
The new Rooney rules, two interviews from outside of your organization and allowing guys to interview for position coaches, will help more minorities get head coaching jobs. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, man, we got to shake it still.
Yeah, I don't – look, at the end of the day, it's up to the owners to make the decisions on who they want to hire and get the people in front of them. Just because you interview them don't mean nothing. You've been interviewing them. You just been interviewing them from inside. What's the difference? It ain't no difference to me. So, okay, so you're going to go and you're going to interview Lovie Smith because he coaches at Illinois, when you know damn well you don't have no desire to hire him at all. But guess what you're going to do? You're going to clear the Rooney rule. And then you're going to go interview Hugh Jackson, who's on the streets, and you have no desire to hire him at all. But you know both of those are good dudes, and they both go come for the interview and not turn them down.
Is there any rule, any logistic change that you can make to the process that's going to have a benefit, or do you have to just change the way that guys think, which is sometimes impossible to do?
Travis, this is what you need to know. When it was discovered that certain owners were being overtly racist within the body of their franchises, and the collective ownership group of the NFL wasn't outraged by this in a very vocal way, that told you everything you needed to know. Everything. Think about the response to Donald Sterling and the audio tape and how the NBA and the family of the NBA responded. Think about Marge, what's her name? The Cincinnati Reds owner.
Marge Schott.
Remember her and how people responded. And here in the NFL, they kind of greeted with a little bit of a shoulder shrug. Now, I'm not suggesting that they agree with what's being said, nor am I saying that they are inherently racist.
Well, they got rid of Jerry. They got rid of Jerry Richardson.
But you are certainly sending out a message that you're at the very least indifferent or complicit with what's being said and the culture that comes from that.
Well, they made Jerry Richardson sell the team. So I'm not, you know, as far as when it becomes a situation of public and it's out there, they certainly are going to act, because racism and stuff like that is different when it's loud than when it's silent. When it's silent and nobody says anything about it, that's different. But once it gets out and it's public, you got these leagues have got to address it. It became very, very silent with the NBA for a long period of time and Donald Sterling. But once it got loud, when she released them tapes, the NBA swiftly moved in. And that goes for Major League Baseball, too. I just think until an owner makes a decision that this is what I'm going to do, much like the Miami Dolphins and Stephen Ross did, they made a decision that this is what we hired a black general manager who therefore is in charge, who can hire a black head coach. The Arizona State University hired a black athletic director who then in turn around hired a black head coach eventually who hired black assistants. That is the only way you're going to get it done.
All right, let's move on to the next one here. Let's go to the college game. Here's Paul Feinbaum saying that the Pac-12 conference could lose a bunch of players if they can't figure out how to get on the field this season.
If the decision is made fairly early that the Pac-12 is not going to play, and the NCAA rules that, yes, they could transfer without penalty, it will be the great gold rush in reverse. Instead of going east to west, it will be west to east. And I would think the top players out there would bail immediately.
Are players going to leave the Pac-12 this season to go somewhere else? Take it or shake it.
Take it.
No, no, man. No. What about the Pac-12?
If Paulie is saying everything that the Pac-12 is thinking about doing actually comes to fruition and the NCAA lifts the transfer ban where you could be eligible immediately and the other conferences are playing, players is going to play because their dream is to get to the NFL. If you ain't playing, then they can't see you. Therefore, your chances of getting to the NFL is getting slimmer. So you want to put yourself in a position to get drafted. The only way you could do that is being able to play and get on the field. And your only option is to transfer and go somewhere that's actually playing football. Then you damn right they're getting ready to get a
play. Isn't it a bit of a numbers game, though, Key? I mean, can you think about it? That if you take 10 guys from, let's say, SC decides that there's 10 guys that want to go, that's 10 spots somewhere else that need to be available, right? It's not just as easy as, oh, I'll go over to Michigan or Alabama or LSU and sign up there. Those guys got guys, too.
Well, you obviously got to be – well, you think – what's the kid up at Oregon, a defensive end? Thibodeau?
Oh, yeah, Kayvon Thibodeau.
Kayvon Thibodeau. You think nobody don't want him? You think they don't want D'Amador Lenore or Thomas?
No, there's Frank? No, don't get me wrong. There's a few guys that anybody
there's a,
would
there's
want.
A handful of – there's going to be guys – that's going to be able to go to other conferences. Everybody not going to be able to go. Everybody can't do a lot of things in life. But the ones that could go to get ready to make their money, they're going to get picked up. Alabama going to be sitting at the Art Eugene bus stop waiting. Remember SMU got the death penalty. They was hanging out in the parking lot, coaches from all over the country.
I'll take you. Yeah. Come on over here.
Like it's a farmer's market.
Exactly.
Paul Feinbaum is going to join us coming up a little bit later on in the program, about 10 minutes from right now. So we'll talk to Paul about that. Let's move on to the NBA. Doc Rivers was telling a story about how he had a deal in place for J.J. Redick when Donald Sterling said that he did not want to do it because he did not like white players. They ultimately worked the deal out after Doc said, you were not going to tarnish my reputation with that nonsense. Here it is, Key. There is nothing you could hear about Donald Sterling that would shock you. Take it or shake it.
Take it!
All right.
You throw a subject out, I'll tell you, not shocked. Throw another one out, I'll tell you, not shocked.
He's on the list, right? That there's a handful of guys that if you said Donald Sterling did blank, yep, I believe you. But
here's the crazy thing. So this is what I would say. He said he didn't like white players. Okay.
Right.
Now, did he not like white players because he thought they wasn't good? Or did he not like white players because he thought they wasn't good? You know what I mean by that? I'm going to tell you right now.
Tell me.
Good in the form or good on the court? Good in the form or good on the court? You following me?
No.
Okay. good on the slave trade or good on the court? Why didn't he like him?
Good luck crawling inside of Donald Sterling's brain. Sterling, every decision he made made no sense. I mean, JJ Redick is a good NBA player.
I don't like white players because I like them black dudes, you know, the big strong brothers that just I could just look at.
Well, clearly that was a part
of
it. What was it, Olden Polynice, where we found out in that story?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I gave it to you in a slave manner. Did he like him in the form? He didn't like him in the form because he didn't think he can work hard. And he wasn't under pressure.
Gotcha.
He didn't give them sneakers and feed their kids. What Donald Sterling say, man? I fed their kids and I gave them sneakers or something. He said
something like that. Look, Donald Sterling clearly liked the optics of him being the white guy with a bunch of black players. He said that to Elgin Baylor that's what he wanted the setup to be. That's how he liked it. So
man,
this comes as absolutely no surprise at all.
Man, he's crazy. Like, he's legitimately crazy. Like, you know, I don't like white players. Well, why you don't like him? Because what is it that he don't play good defense? Like, tell me why you don't like him.
He doesn't like the look of it.
Or you just don't like the way he look, and you can't talk to him the same way you could talk to the black dudes and feel good about it.
The second thing, right? I mean, it's not even – I don't think Donald Sterling would know a good basketball player from a bad basketball player, quite honestly. I mean, look at the way that the Clippers operated for 40 years or whatever it was. He doesn't know good from bad when it comes to the ability to play. He just sees color, period.
Man, that dude's so stupid, man. I can't do nothing but laugh at him. I can't even get mad. I can't get mad at him. I just laugh at him because it's a joke.
Paul Feinbaum is going to join us next. We'll talk about the exodus of players from the Pac-12 that he thinks is a real possibility if they can't figure it out. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.